This week on Art of the Air, we feature artist Ahmad Lee, known as Rico the Great, whose multidisciplinary approach creates stunning art pieces. Next, we have ceramic artist Teresa Wooden, whose narrative-styled work is reminiscent of fairy tale illustrations. Our spotlight is on the 41st Annual Lebesnik Arts Festival, running August 19th and 20th, featuring over 80 artists, family activities, artist demos, and more.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, and WDSO 88.3 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight for the first time is Jessie Sexton. She's the marketing coordinator for the Lebesnik Center for Arts. And she's going to be talking about some upcoming things happening. Most importantly is the wonderful art festival they have. Jessie, welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, welcome.
First of all, before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit about you since you're first time on the show. How long you've been there, what exactly you do as marketing coordinator, and a little bit about your background.
Sure, yeah.
How did you find the Lebesnik Center?
Yes. I've been here for a really long time, actually. I used to do the after-school art classes through Safe Harbor with our education director, and I would do summer camps and things. So I've been here for quite a while. It's been like over 8 years, I think. I started right out of high school. I came here to volunteer, and I just have never left. So I really do love working here. And then now I've been doing the social media aspect of the marketing. So I run the Facebook page, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. And I take a lot of the photos that we have during events and stuff like that. So.
And Twitter is no longer. Beautiful. It's now X.
Yeah, that's right. I did see that the other day.
So tell us a little bit about the upcoming art fair. What year this is? I mean, how many years they've been doing it? And what people can expect to come and see?
Yeah, so this is our 41st annual Lebesnik Art Festival. And we're going to have over 70 artists all from around the United States in a variety. We have fine craft, two-dimensional art, photography, sculptural, wearables, jewelry. So there's a lot of different things that people will be able to find, lots of different price ranges for everybody. And so we're also...
So Jessie, where's the furthest somebody is coming from?
Ooh, I'm sure that I know we have somebody coming from like the Florida area. I think somebody's coming from maybe further on the East Coast. I don't know off the top of my head, though. There are okay. People from all over that apply for this festival and come from everywhere. So it's really exciting. And we'll have some indoor artists as well, too. So that'll be interesting.
What kind of demos will there be?
We'll have a live demo. We'll have murals going on. We'll also have our family activity tent where we'll invite families and everybody to come and be a part of another mural that they can work on. We'll also have a ceramicist. We'll bring her pottery wheel, Marlena Matheson. She's got some really cool things. So she'll be doing some live demos. And yeah, it should be pretty exciting.
Well, an art festival can't be an art festival without food. So what kind of food vendors do we have?
That's right. We'll have Cabos. The Cabos will be doing ice cream and food, and they always deliver really well. So we're excited to have them back this year. They were there last year. And yeah, get ready for tacos and ice cream.
And this year, again, Sunday is free thanks to the McDonald's of LaPorte County. Is that correct? Does that still hold?
Yes. Sunday's always free for our festival thanks to the McDonald's in LaPorte County. Saturday's admission will be $5, but it is free if you're an LCA member, kids 16 and under, and active military and veterans. So that will be free for them.
And you have access to the exhibit that's going on. Tell us a little bit about that. We had an interview before, but you know, let people know that they can also see what that exhibit in the main gallery.
Yeah, so while you're at the festival, you can come inside and view the Vivian Mayer in Color exhibit. It's centered around the Chicago History Museum's Vivian Mayer collection. It features 50 color prints, and that spans from the late 1950s to the 1970s. It's really, really cool. And there's also a couple other artists in our upstairs galleries. Natasha Mustache has an exhibit called Under the Same Sun. It's really beautiful photography. And in our Susan Block Gallery, there is a video and that's called To Render the Infinite. And that's by Zakia Najiba Dumas O'Neill. And that is also really cool. So you definitely want to come upstairs and check those out too.
So, Jesse, can you reveal who the indoor gallery will be? Are you going to do that again this year?
We will have some indoor gallery people. I'm not sure who they are off the top of my head right now. I want to say Annika Decker could be there. She was there last year. But I don't want to say anybody else because I don't know for sure.
Sure. Well, it's nice. It's nice that you do that.
And classes. You're getting fall enrollment. Tell us a little about some of the classes that are offered by Lebesnik.
Yeah, so right now we're just finishing up our summer classes. We still have two workshops that you could sign up for. We have an embroidery workshop that starts on July 29th, and we also have a beaded workshop as well. And then for fall, we're getting ready. We're going to have theater. We're also going to have a ballroom dancing class, some interesting things. We always have our abstract painting class with Jay Zerbe that's super popular. Sandcastle Writers is back. We have watercolor classes or mixed media classes with Michelle Weiser as well. So there's lots of stuff that'll be coming out
soon. Those are excellent classes, I can say.
Yeah.
So in our final minute here, let's remind our audience the details of coming to the festival.
Sure. Yeah. So we're going to have 70 plus artists from all over the country, indoor exhibits, contemporary artists. We'll have family activities. There'll be free art making, live demos. There's also beer and wine and local food vendors from Cabos and more. And then the mural invitational will be going on. We'll have a community mural for everyone to also be a part of as well. So it'll be super exciting, and it'll be free on Sunday for everyone, thanks to McDonald's of LaPorte County, and $5 on Saturday if you're not a member or a child under 16 or active military member.
I'd like to thank Jesse Sexton, Marketing Coordinator for Lebesnik Center. A 41st Annual Lebesnik Art Festival is Saturday, August 19th and Sunday, August 20th, and times are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Jesse.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Whitney Reynolds of The Whitney Reynolds Show, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Ahmad Lee, known as Rico the Great, to Art on the Air. Rico is an international, multidisciplinary fine artist, graphic designer, and art director with over 2 decades of experience. His style can be described as a variety of things depending on the subject matter: bold, abstract, stylized realism, trick of the eye, or street with a quality and sophistication. His recent solo show at the Gallery Guichard in Chicago is a compelling body of work that tells a social justice story. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Rico. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Well, Rico, we want to have, you know, about your origin story. Hear about, you know, where you grew up, early influences and things like that in art. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about Rico the Great.
Okay. Well, I'll start from where I was born. I was born in Blue Island, Illinois. I've lived all over Chicago, so from north, south, east to the west. My art journey started very young, drawing a lot of Ninja Turtles. They're actually dropping a movie I'm going to see this week. I'm really excited about that. But I literally just loved the Ninja Turtles, so I would draw them and draw them. And I started off, you know, pretty bad for a child, and just grew into getting better and better. And I had an art teacher named Mr. Barron in Richland Park, Illinois, at a school called Neil Armstrong. And he said, you know, you can draw other things besides turtles. Once I did that, I started just dibbling and dabbling, and I started making my own abstract style. And I started getting more and more attention, and they said you should do these contests and fairs, and I started winning some of them. And from that point on, I still really wasn't taking art serious because I really had an interest in sports, but I always did draw. I always played with construction paper. My mother was an educator. My aunties are educators, so they always kept me with all the materials and everything stockpiled. So I always played with it, but I didn't really know that artists could do this full time, make money. I heard about Picasso. I heard about like Da Vinci and stuff in school, but I didn't really know what was going on in the world. So going from there, started high school, had another huge influence in my life. His name was Jack Mayer. Mr. Mayer was an art teacher at my school in Rich South, which is also in Richland Park. And he was an amazing artist himself. And he was just one of the teachers that, like, some people go just get a paycheck. He was one of the people that really wanted to pour into his students' lives. And he really got on my tail, like, you have talent and you could really go places with this. Like, you need to take this very serious. And once again, I still was playing sports. I was really good at baseball, basketball, soccer. So I wasn't really taking the art serious. But he put his own money up and gave me and another student named Matt Warren his credit card, gave us a book and said, look and learn and see what these things are and buy whatever you want because you all are really that good. So once again, somebody's telling me I'm amazing or something, and I used his credit card and he ordered us a lot of cool stuff and kind of just showed me the way and really lit the fire under me to start going crazy.
So what materials did you get?
So I just used to use regular ballpoint pens back in the day, and I was using regular computer paper, maybe construction paper. He really put me on illustration board. He put me on Prismacolor markers, which were very expensive, Micron pens. And I kind of took that and created my own style, started blending a lot of stuff and just using stuff that I just didn't know was available instead of using just regular Crayola markers and stuff like that just to fill in space. He really taught me, like, yo, there's amazing materials. They cost a little bit more, but if you get the stuff, you know, you'll expand your craft. And so from there, I grew, started winning contests in there. I was pretty much like the best artist at my high school, making money, got scholarships from a lot of different schools in around the U.S. I wound up staying in Chicago and went to Columbia College Chicago. I went for illustration, but when I got there, my eyes got opened up to graphic design, you know, MacBook computers and stuff like that. I didn't know anything about how stuff was being made. I just saw it, thought it just was there. But from there, I still was doing the illustration classes, but I actually learned, you know, how to do websites. I started learning how to do graphics. And while I was really young, I had some friends who were very popular around the city, and they would bring me around to some of the clubs as a young underage kid. And I started talking to club owners and telling them I could make their flyers. I could do this. I could do that. And at a young age, they thrust me into a world that just kind of opened my eyes to a lot of the money around Chicago and the stuff that's going on. I kind of stopped doing the art. I went more into the graphics, which is still, I guess, art as well. But
yeah,
from there, was navigating through college, learning everything I could learn, making a lot of connections around the city and the neighboring states. And I kind of stopped drawing for a long time and really took the graphics really, really serious and started making some money there. But one of my friends was always asking me, like, are you still got that artwork? Are you still doing anything? And I'm like, yeah, I still dibble and dabble and draw. And I was drawing, but I was actually uploading it into Illustrator and Photoshop to color the work now instead of, you know, really doing anything with the drawings and stuff. And he said, yo, that work is really good. Like, you should start showing it to these collectors. And I'm like, I don't know anything about art collectors. And he really stayed on me. His name's Arvell Brown. I always got to give him his credit and his flowers. He found a collector on Instagram, and he said, send him just some of your work and just ask him what he thinks. I was like, I've never, like, cold called somebody before. He's like, no, just do it. I sent it to him, and this dude really loved my work. He said, yeah, that's cool and that's cute. He said, I want to see your painting. And I'm like, I've never painted before. And he said, I'll commission 5 pieces from you. Take as long as you want to finish it, but I want them to all be paintings in different sizes. So that really got me to where we are right now. I'm doing interviews and talking to people and doing work around the world and stuff, because he has a beautiful collection. His friends really like artwork. And when he posted the work that I did, it really opened up the doors and the flooded my life with learning how to paint, doing murals, and to this interview where we're at right now. So I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, those mentors. Are you still in touch with the elementary school and high school teachers who?
Sadly, after elementary school, I never heard from Mr. Barron again. And I know he left the district, so I lost contact with him. But I would love to just let him know the whirlwind life that happened after I left there in 8th grade. And Jack Mayer, Mr. Mayer, he actually passed away a few years ago, but he was able to come to my first show and he bought a piece for me. So that was like a full circle moment. And yeah, it was really sad to hear he passed away. And I actually, on every single piece that I do, I always write, rest in peace, Mr. Mayer, on there. And it's funny because people might look on the back of their pieces like, I don't know what this is doing on the back of my piece, but it's like my ode to him. So he's everywhere my art is at.
Oh, that's so beautiful. And how wonderful he did get to go to that show, because it just, like you said, a full circle moment. He invested his time and look what you did. Wow. So I have a question about your art, actually. And your work is so layered and filled with information. You know, I looked at that Guichard and all of your work, and it really requires time to look at it. It's not something you can just go in and leave the gallery. I found myself really spending time and sifting through each one. And paintings are disarming, and I find there's a strong contrast between the style, which is bold, it's bouncy, it's colorful, and it's even playful at first glance. And then, you know, you delve into like all the layers, and it's really a complex journey. There's an exciting element of like on the spot rap to them. And so I was wondering, where do you begin, or do you know where you're going when you start? And so how do you develop a painting?
That's actually a great question. I lay out the canvas, get it prepped, get it just hung up on the wall. And I just take whatever colors are right around me and I just blend them. So there's just this beautiful burst of color and energy on the wall. And I do not know where I'm gonna start ever. So unless it's a commission where somebody comes in and they have this full paragraph that they've written out, or these characters that they wanna see, I never really know where I'm gonna start. I'll literally just start out with a couple of lines and kind of how my mind works. It's like super weird. I always tell people this. It's like little white lines that are kind of just telling me where to go to get like the base started. And then once I see that, I can kind of see the whole piece. And it might change day to day, depending on how big the piece is, because I work very fast. So one day I might be coming and I might just be off the emotions of watching something happening, like the George Floyd incident or something. So everything in the piece could just be changed depending on how long I work with it, because sadly in our world, I mean, there's so much good, but there's so much bad as well. And it just chews on you and does its own thing inside of you. So with my art, I never really know where I'm going, and it's just the wild journey. So it's like, that's why the stuff's always layered. And then there might be these little taglines or these banners or these little texts just hidden in there that are just stuff that's playing in my mind. And I love that because when somebody purchases my pieces, they might have bought it 6 or 7 years ago, and one day they're just in their kitchen or in their living room, and they're like, I just saw something that I had no idea. Like, I knew what I liked in the piece and why I bought it, and I'm finding stuff over and over and over again. So the piece is always ever evolving. That's why I love layering and everything like that, because it's not just what you see. Because if you just walk by and see some of my work, you're like, oh, it's just Snoopy or something like that. And it's like, no, nah, Snoopy's just, I'm using him as a vessel to convey a message that's deeper than this painting.
It's right. Like,
it's really about not just Black struggle, not just anything. It could be about women's rights. It could be just slavery. It could be about anything. So I just kind of just love playing with the stuff God or the energy that gives us to just what's happening in the world. So that's why I like my last show is What a Time to Be Alive. It's just literally stuff that's been just stockpiled in my brain over the last 37 years that I've seen, read about, learned, and get to talk to people about all around the world. So it's kind of.
So with that canvas, you really don't know where you're going to, like you might start in the middle, you might start at an edge, you might start. And so then is it progressing in a certain way in your mind that you're telling the story, or can you start at the left and then move to the right and then go to the middle and, you know, like.
Recently, I've been starting in one spot and just kind of just growing out from there. Similar to like some of the work behind me and everything like
right.
that.
Right.
No, when. It just really depends piece by piece. I can just jump and kind of just bring it all back together like a puzzle piece and everything like that.
Yeah, it must be because like in viewing them, and I don't mean this in a, you know, it hurts my head because there's just so, in a good way, there's just so much to pull apart and you just can't even do it. Like, I know that it would be something that you would need to explore over decades even, and the meanings and the interconnection of the meanings, and I don't know, it was an intense experience, let me tell you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that part about it, because a lot of people come to me like, oh, you're a successful artist, you're this, you're that, and they're like, well, how did you get there, and what do you feel about when people look at your work? And I'm like, I just want people to feel anything. I want you to love it, I want you to hate it, I want you to be confused, I want you to just try to figure it out on your own, because I look at art and I just see what I see. I mean, artists could literally tell me, I made this because of that, and I'm like, well, this means something different to me. And I just think that's the beauty of the layers of my work and actually playing around with the pop art style and the abstractness and just some of the artists I really like. Like, I mean, jumping into the question we were talking about earlier, just some of the influences. When I was younger and I started trying to figure out what the new artists were, I kept falling back to like Salvador Dali and all these people just there that were deep in the past, because I'm just like, they were painting this stuff in a different time where I'm not even born. I don't know what was going on. I can read about the paintings and stuff like that, but it's just insane to see some of those works and everything like that. So like Dali always was amazing. I really like Van Gogh's stuff. Now, didn't dive too deep into it. I really was just looking at the work and coming up with my own ideas about that sure. stuff.
So how did it play? So this collector, at what point was that? So was this the painting a COVID sort of exploration? No, because you have a gigantic body of work for this, the Guichard show.
No, the collector, I'm trying to think how long ago that was. I want to say it had to be about 9 years ago. So it was pre-COVID. And, yeah, I mean, I was doing actually some teaching at a high school, and after he bought those pieces, and he bought some of my also marker and ink work, and he was posting that work, and his friends have a lot of money, and they started buying like old sketchbooks and stuff. I made a decent amount of money where I stopped teaching. Like, I left the profession. I've never looked back, and I've been I was lucky to always have the work as a graphic designer and doing the web work with my business partner Kellen Mitchell, but I started full-time grinding, doing artists. And I didn't know anything when I started doing paintings. I was starting very small, 18 by 24. I would think 24 by 24 was big, and then just kept progressing and progressing. And now I'm taking up, I can't even work in my studio in the house anymore because the wall doesn't work for the sizes that I'm going now. And
yeah, they.
So, no, that was about 9 years ago, so pre-COVID. And it was just a wild ride. Like, I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would be a full-time artist and doing okay, like thriving. I mean, I'm not a millionaire or anything like that, but I can pay my bills, I can travel, I can can afford to buy the good materials and stuff like that. And yeah, so it was pre-COVID when I met him. And once that journey started about 9 to 10 years ago, I've been full-time artist since then.
So what was your COVID experience like?
The COVID experience for me was actually pretty good. Pre-COVID, I started doing large-scale murals for businesses and just cool stuff for the city and outside of the city for chambers of commerce and stuff like that. So some of those jobs, as long as they were outside, you know, we had to follow the CDC guidelines and everything like that, but I was still working. And in the middle of that, I hired a few artists to do stuff with me. And when I would ask them, like, send me an invoice or tell me how you work your materials and do you do 50% deposits and stuff, they had no knowledge of really what to do. So in that, I started talking to a lady named Missy Perkins and Barrett Keithley, and they had just started a nonprofit called Paint the City in Chicago, which actually was helping young Black and brown artists get work with businesses, teaching them the ins and outs of how to actually write invoices, how to actually do your taxes, how to actually write up materials, stuff like that, how to secure getting lifts when you have to be off the ground, what insurance is needed when you have to work with these companies so you can cover your tail. So with that, I just loved what they were doing. And I said, yo, I want to help. I know artists that need help. I want to get people, you know, acclimated and in the game like I was at that time. So my COVID experience was a lot of work, a lot of talking with artists, a lot of mural jobs in California, because for some reason people weren't taking those jobs. And I had relationships with people and they're like, this dude works well. He has a team. They're very professional and they travel. So I was really painting and really just having fun. So, you know, I didn't really have any health issues during the COVID time. So I was on my feet and on the ground just trying to help as many people as I can with that around the art world. So COVID was actually pretty good for me.
Rico, I want to ask you about your digital art. It is so layered and everything. It's amazing. You take elements from popular culture, historical things. Some of it's photorealistic that's incorporated with everything else. So tell us a little bit about your process in creating that and then pulling that out into a form that you render it outside of the computer world. And everything. So tell us a little about your process and everything in rendering.
Okay. With the digital artwork, it's kind of like the art. It is very random, and it's all about emotions and what I feel at that time. And it's easier to work the digital because, like you said, if I'm just making this, let's say 36 by 36 piece and everything like that, and I want to go pull every member of the Spice Girls, a picture of Michael Jordan, you know, Goofy from Disney or anything like that, I can have it at an instant with the internet. So what I started doing once I was creating, and I really only was creating those digital images when I was flying. So I was like, I don't like really drawing with the turbulence because you never know. I have this beautiful masterpiece and then boom, somebody elbows you at a food cart, hits your leg, and now you just messed it up. And I use ink, so you can't go back. But I started doing the digital stuff on my computers, and these pieces were just for me. And once again, I met a dude named Matthew Moore. He has an art company called Artist Replete. He saw the stuff and he said, man, you should get these things printed. Man, you can do shows with this. And, you know, I never thought about it. I'm like, yeah, these are images that I could easily print to any size. I could scale that stuff up. I could do vinyl. I could do whatever. So I met him. He started kind of telling me the game of, like, these printers can do. They can literally print that artwork and make it feel like it's acrylic paintings and stuff like that. So we started printing some of those, selling some of those, incorporating those canvases into actual physical paintings where you would just do part of the canvas and they print it and leave it white. All you have to do is gesso it and you can paint. And now you have a photorealistic art piece and stuff like that. So, what really helped me with that is that I love searching through the internet and researching stuff. So if I ever see a dope picture, I'm screenshotting it, I'm saving it, and I just would create folders. And these folders would have 10, 20,000 images, and I could just go and pull from those and just build out a piece, you know, just like making a sandwich or something like that. So
your own little library of images. Do you use mostly Illustrator for that or Photoshop?
I'm mixing and matching with both, but it's more so Photoshop.
Okay, very good. And so, yeah, I'm looking at, while you were talking, I was looking through your digital art once again and just saw some of the, you know, I can't say it's highly political, but there's some things that comment on our society that in there, it's just a really something to see that and the depth of, I mean, the thought, you know, work. I'm a photographer and I work with Photoshop, though I don't do this type of art, but I know the process by doing that is really something. So, I know your exhibit at Jussard is closing, so I hope you had a success. What are the things you have coming up pretty soon?
Yes, the show was a success at Gallery Jussard. I met a lot of beautiful, amazing people, sold some pieces, and met some new collectors. Coming up, I don't have dates at the moment, but I'm working with one of my good friends and a collector. Her name is Danielle Moore. She owns Semicolon Bookstore in Chicago. It's an amazing bookstore. Everybody should check it out. She's just purchased some real estate in Wynwood in Miami, and we're going to be doing something at Art Basel. So don't have the exact date yet because we're still working on finishing the space, but I will definitely be doing an exhibit at Art Basel and possibly be doing a couple mural walls out there as well. So we're kind of in the process of working through that, but love going to Art Basel. So that's pretty much my next big thing, but I'm always working and getting stuff situated because you just never know. I mean, these galleries are always looking for new talent and stuff to do. So definitely in conversation with a few people, but the next big thing I know for sure is going to be Art Basel.
That is big.
That sounds great. And approaching a mural real quick, you know, in our about minute and a half we have left here, tell us about that process, how you you see a wall or whatever. And so what would you pre-lay it out or you just make it happen right on site?
Sometimes if you're working with a client, they might need approval to see mock-ups and everything like that. So we might go over like, okay, this is for this restaurant, so we want to see these elements in there. And then I would do the mock-ups in Photoshop and Illustrator and get approval for that. But I've also had clients that came and said, I love your work. I want you to just freestyle it. I want these colors in there and go crazy, but just please no political stuff. So I've heard that. Like, you know, you don't want somebody in your restaurant or in your business saying, oh, okay, so this is how you guys are really leaning right now. But but whenever I do get walls to myself, it's just fresh out of my head. I mean, I might use a reference photo if I want to remember how like Elmer Fudd looks or something like that. If I'm adding him in, it's mostly just freestyling.
Excellent.
That's so exciting.
Well, tell us about how people can find you online, website, all their social media and things like that.
Okay, I'll start it off with this. Social media is at Rico the Great. It's R-E-C-O-T-H-E. G-R-E-A-T, and that's my Instagram. And then my website is ahmadlee.com. That has all my client work on there, digital murals, apparel. I have a company called Jacket Robinson. That link is in there, and the site is actually living in that site. And those are the two main things that I use. And then just if you're around Chicago, I'm sure you're past some of my murals. You see Rico the Great on there, take a picture and tag me in it.
Sounds great. We appreciate you coming on the air. That's Ahmad Lee, otherwise known as Rico the Great. Thank you so much for sharing your art and your art journey on Art on the Air.
Yeah, thank you. It was so exciting.
No problem. It was lovely.
I am writer, television, and radio personality Mark Edward Willows, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
And WDSO, 88.3 FM.
We would like to welcome Teresa Wooden to Art on the Air. Teresa is a Michigan-based ceramic artist working in fine art ceramics and bonsai pottery. She began her career in ceramics in 2004. Her award-winning work specializes in hand-carved ceramics, utilizing sgraffito to create nature-themed patterns. Since 2020, she began studying the art of bonsai and began producing containers for the growing and exhibition of bonsai trees. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Teresa. Hi.
Hello. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, we'd like to have you here, Teresa. And we always want to know a little bit more about our guests, their origin story, how I like to say it is, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Teresa.
Oh, boy. Okay, so I grew up in southern Indiana, actually. And my father had a job in which he moved like every couple of years. So in talking to some of my friends who have been in the military, it was somewhat like a military upbringing, as I was always the new kid in school. So my grandmother's farm in southern Indiana was sort of my anchor. And to this day, the place that in my memory and in my heart, that's home. So she had vast woods. I mean, it was a very rural setting. And I would take off with the dog and I would wander out in the woods and be gone for hours, just even a mile or 2 miles away out in the woods alone. And this is from when I was a little, like probably 7, 8 years old, up until she passed away and we lost the farm when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And it was like a different time. Eventually I'd come home and the family would say, well, we were starting to wonder where you were. But children don't have that ability to wander off and be by themselves so much. I know it's a different world and it's a more dangerous world, perhaps not rural. But it was an idyllic kind of a childhood. I followed the deer paths and I knew all of the trees and all of the plants. I knew where the dens were. I carried a sketchbook and I made sketches and I made notes. I was like a little naturalist. And it was really a beautiful upbringing. I felt very close to nature. And all of that has stayed with me. Then as I got into school, as an artist, I was always very good at art. It's like if somebody came into the class and said, okay, who's the artist in the class? Everybody pointed at me. So I got some awards in high school and was encouraged, but I wanted to be an artist. But then when I got into high school and was thinking about a career, I chose what I thought was a more sensible path. And I went into an education degree. And now as I've gotten older, I know that you should really listen to your first impulse. That is your truest self. And had I to do it over, I would have gone into the arts. But it came back around and it got me in the end. So I got a degree in education and met my husband. While I was still in high school, we met at a county fair while we were both showing livestock in 4-H. And we've been together ever since. He's an engineer, and we have 3 kids now that live in Indianapolis, Seattle, and Chicago. And my daughter went into an arts career, too. She's in theater costume design. She got her master's from Northwestern, and she does that in Chicago, runs her own business. And so while we were in Indiana raising kids, we had a farm in Indiana, which we called Fox Meadow Farm because we had a den of foxes in the back, and we loved watching the foxes. That comes back around to my art later when I was putting foxes on everything. It's because of that. The kids raised livestock, and my daughter actually showed rabbits nationally. We took her, she had little like miniature Angora rabbits. They were long-haired, fluffy rabbits called Jersey Woolies. And we
they're so cute.
From Rhode Island to California. And she was like topping her breed for youth. And we did that for years. At one time she had like 110 rabbits. So rabbits show up on my work. Also because we had a pet hare. His name was Thorn while we were at the farm. And Thorn shows up in all the hairs that I put on my work.
That's who graces my gigantic bowl.
That's Thorn. You have a bowl that has hairs on it, and that's Thorn.
Oh, how sweet.
While we were raising livestock, we also had a U-Pick strawberry farm. So we were running that. And at the time, I was doing watercolors, and I was doing some mural work for some organizations and some businesses. So then we moved to Wisconsin, and the kids were growing up. And one day I decided to I have this nativity set that I've been collecting for years and years, and they never made a camel for the wise men, and then they discontinued it. So I wanted a camel for the wise men. That's how I got into ceramics. And I had to make it. So I went to the Hobby Lobby or whatever it was at the time, and I got some of that oven clay that you can stick it in the right. oven, and I made my camel. And while I was doing that, I was going, oh my gosh, I really remember how cool this was, because like my first memory of clay was in kindergarten. They sent us down to the art class in the basement of this old brick building next to the boiler room. And I remember she gave us a ball of clay. And it was like, I was so excited for this ball of clay. And she told us not to touch it until we got instructions, right? But I couldn't stop touching it. And my mind was going off with all of these plans. I wanted to make a dragon. I wanted to make a winged Pegasus. I wanted to make something great. And she made us roll it out into little snakes and build a coil pot. And I was heartbroken.
Yeah, but you're sure doing dragons and creatures now.
Yes, I am. And I just loved it. And I said, I've got to find a class, and I feel a calling to do this. So I looked all over the place. In Wisconsin, the only place I could find to take classes was in Milwaukee. It was like almost an hour drive from my house. And I was committed. I went to that class even when the roads were closed with snow down to one lane. It's like I had to go. But I was terrible at it. I could not center the clay for over a year, and I just stuck with it. I was very stubborn, but I was horrible. And then one day we had a substitute teacher come in, and she was just a student at the university nearby, but she was in ceramics. And she looked at how I was trying to center this clay on the wheel, and she said, why are you trying to center the clay like a dude? You have to center the clay like a chick. I said, well, that's how they showed us to do it. And she said, no, look, do it this way. So she had me bring my elbow in and put it in my hip and then use my center of gravity to push the clay into center. And boom, it centered right there.
Wow.
And it's like as soon, I had struggled for over a year. And she just fixed it right there. And it's like as soon as I could center it, everything else about throwing pots fell into place. It was weird. It was almost as if I already knew what to do, but I couldn't get past that first part.
You just needed the key.
Yeah. And then I just like took off with it. And I started taking classes with a local potter, Jill Tortorella, down in Antioch, Illinois, and she taught me the basics of making forms. And then I started taking workshops with well-known potters, nationally known. Worked with Stephen Hill for a couple of years on a workshop where he helped me with aesthetics and really taught me how to see pots and look at them in a different way. And I started selling and going to art fairs and developed the sgraffito, which means it's carving into colored clay layers on top of the base clay. So you get, it was black and white designs on tan colored clay, and it was all nature oriented. And I was going back to my childhood. It was pictures of the woods, pictures of the animals that I loved in the woods. It was the rabbits that we raised. It was the foxes in the back of the farm. It was the butterflies. It was the stories that I read and the fairy tales that I loved. And I put all of that into a body of work. And it was very successful at art fairs around Chicago. And then we moved to Michigan. During that time, let me add also that while I was learning to throw clay, my mother developed Alzheimer's and I was her caregiver. And that was a very difficult time for me. The kids were growing up and leaving. Bob was traveling all the time. I was taking care of Mom. And clay gave me an escape. It gave me creation. To me, it was kind of the power of creativity in the face of destruction.
And it's so physical. It's really a great way to release emotions into that clay, because it is like, it's hard work to work in ceramics.
You know, it's almost meditative, because when you're at the wheel and you're working on a pot, all of your attention is there and you're communicating with the clay I'm feeling it. I'm talking with it. And while I'm doing that, I'm not worrying about anything else. I'm totally centered, totally right there. Because one thing is, if you're not centered, the clay won't center.
Right.
I find that to be true. If I'm having an off day, if it's a bad day for some reason, energy wise, emotion wise, whatever, I don't do well at the wheel. So sometimes if I have a really big project, I wait until I know that I'm centered and in a good place myself, and then it will work. But clay really gave me an escape, and it really helped me get through that period of time.
You know, I loved one thing in your biography about how you got rid of your dolls and toys when you got your set of crayons. Yeah, tell us a little just about that experience.
When I was probably about 4 years old, nobody probably remembers this. There was a large doll called Chatty Cathy.
Oh, yeah.
You do?
I think we all remember Chatty Cathy.
I wanted Chatty Cathy so badly. I guess I saw it on a commercial or something, and I begged for it. And my mother managed to get one for me. And I know she was very pleased. She was going to give me this fabulous gift she thought I wanted so badly. But at the same time, they gave me a brand new box, like the big box of crayons with the sharpener on the back.
Yeah, the 64.
Yes. And I opened Chatty Cathy, and that was great. But then I opened the crayons, and it was over. To this day, I can still smell the crayons. I was so excited. And she actually got kind of sad. Well, I guess I wasted my money on that or something like that. I don't know. She was disappointed.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM.
And then the other thing that I had on my website bio is I had a great aunt. She was very special. She saw visions and things, supposedly. And she was talking to me when I was about 12, and she said, "Honey, what is your gift? You have a gift. Everybody has a gift, and you know what it is. What is it?" And I said, "Well, it's art." I knew that without question. I'm an artist. She said, "Well, that's what you need to do." But I didn't do it, did I? I went and got a degree in education instead. But I came back around. So I'm happy to have found my path that was my truest path. Over here to Michigan, and I couldn't set up my studio for a year or two. It's a lot to move a ceramic studio and kilns and everything. We finally got set up, and then COVID hit. And I had been teaching some classes and had done a couple of shows over here. And then I just started reverting to selling online. And I had gotten into studying bonsai because I am a gardener, like crazy gardener. We've got gardens all over the place here. And in studying the bonsai, I had to make a couple of pots, and I took them over to a bonsai nursery called the Flower Market over towards Detroit, that direction. Showed them to them. They said, "Well, that's not quite right." So they gave me some input. There are a lot of rules about bonsai and bonsai pots. They gave me some guidance, and we joined the local bonsai club here in West Michigan Bonsai Club. And they've given me a lot of guidance. And during COVID, I started selling some pots online, and that really took off. The market was so good in bonsai pottery, in fact, that I decided to stop making all the carved functional work and just take a leap and go with the bonsai pottery. And now I sell through bonsai shows and online, and it's been working out very well.
Well, those pots, as everything that you do, are just exquisite. I was looking at them, and the details that, you know, frogs and lizards and dragons, yeah, and then the painted work. So all of that is going into your bonsai as well.
Well, I think what helped me move over to it was that I could apply all the things that I like to do could still be applied on bonsai pottery. There is the theory that the pot should be very quiet, very neutral, and that it should support the tree, but the tree should be the star of the show. That is traditional bonsai teaching. But we've kind of Americanized it, and I'm seeing a lot of bonsai pottery that has brighter glazes, crystalline glazes, all kinds of stuff on it. So the sculpture that I put on it, some carving I put on it, is acceptable over here, as long as it doesn't get too crazy.
Just like all your other, there's like a beautiful, elegant simplicity to it. Your shapes have always been exquisite, and you really do throw beautifully. So thank you to that student teacher who taught you how to center those pots, because you know, your form and shape and your throwing is exquisite.
Thank you. You know, I wish that I could find her, because isn't this a strange thing that you never know in life how something that you do when you meet someone might affect them? She came across my path one day, and she changed the path of what I was doing. I would not be a potter had she not come into that classroom that day. I would have given up eventually. And so, wow, I wish I could find her. I don't even know her last name. I would like to tell her, look what you did. You helped me down this whole path. All of this stuff came about because you had an effect on me that one day.
That's so beautiful. And so when you first, you know, started to dedicate yourself to doing the pottery, because the pieces, the first pieces that I acquired from you, there were images of fairy tales and mythical creatures. Was that all also from your childhood? Was your childhood filled with those stories?
I had an active imagination and loved to wander through the woods and would be making up tales about the fairies or the animals that were in the woods. I also read a lot of books that were nature books and nature-oriented stories about children, and like My Side of the Mountain was one of my favorites. And all of those things are applied. Everything that's in my art, the images in my art, come directly from my childhood or from my experience of being connected to nature, living on a farm, in the woods, in the garden.
I was seeing on your website that the trees are actually supplied by your husband for your pots.
The trees?
Yeah.
Some of them are. We've got about 50 little bonsai trees in the back that we're learning on. I haven't invested in any bonsai trees that are super expensive until I'm sure I'm not going to kill them. So, we've got some cheap ones that if we lose them, it's not so sad.
The care and feeding thereof, right?
Yeah. It is a fascinating hobby. I would encourage anybody to take a look at it. There's a show coming up August 17th, well, the 18th, 19th, and 20th. At the Chicago Botanic Gardens, and I'll have my pottery there for the bonsai show there.
Very good. Do you have anything further down the road that people can catch you at, or in Michigan? Or
in Michigan, not this year. I'll be at Grand Rapids at the Meyer Botanical Gardens next spring in May, and I'll have that's going to be a big bonsai show there again, and I'll have pots there. But meanwhile, they can find me on my website. It's stoneforestpottery.com. And we have some pots up there, but not a lot because I sold out at my last show. So.
And do you do commissions? And if someone contacts you, you say, hey, I would like to have something and kind of give you some to rough with?
I do. And my commissions for this year are full. So that's what I'll be spending my fall and winter doing. So I'm pushing commissions into next year right now. So.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
You know, you talked a little bit about COVID and how it affected business-wise, but how did it affect you personally? Did you find that that was a creative period for you, or was it a little bit of a shutdown?
You know, it kind of shut me down a little bit. As I had been getting classes, I was really busy with that. And It was lonely. Yeah, not seeing people. I actually had students making work at home, and I was kind of remotely, and they were bringing stuff in to be fired. But I didn't create much for very much of that. So it was just a downtime.
So at what point during the years of the COVID did you take up the bonsai?
About midway through, I said, okay, I got to get back to work and stop watching the news. I did, and life was much better. And then I started listing more pots and going online, and it was great. That's when I found out that, oh, this is a very viable avenue to go down. So I'm glad I found it, and I'm really enjoying it. And the community of bonsai people are wonderful.
Well, Teresa, we're just about ready to wrap up here in our last minute. I wanted to give our audience a chance to locate you again online, Facebook. Tell us all your things and where you're located and how they can reach you.
I'm located, you can find us in Holland, Michigan. Website is stoneforestpottery.com. I'm also on Instagram as Stone Forest Pottery. You can find some things there. And otherwise, just email me. All the information is on the website. You can find me. Let me know what you think or what you're looking for.
Well, it sounds great. We really appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your life journey in our conversation and showing your work. And you can see it on the website. That's Teresa Wooden of Stone Forest Pottery in Holland, Michigan. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for adding to my enjoyment of your pottery.
Oh, thank you so much. You're so sweet. I appreciate it.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.